Welcome to Make Today Count, your 60 minutes of fresh conversation served up to inform, educate, and inspire your personal brand. I'm your host, Ross Dean, and each episode I chat to thought leaders, influencers, and experts in their game who all have one thing in common: the desire to go the extra mile, pushing against the status quo to create a richer life for both themselves and those around them. Powered by compassion and driven by the need to leave the world that little bit better than when they arrived. Okay, hi guys, and welcome back to Make Today Count. Another amazing guest for you today. Really looking forward to chatting with Rachel Turner. How are you doing, Rachel?
Yeah, good, thank you.
So great to have you on the show. I got in touch because I love some of the content you were putting out about lots of different subjects. As you know, you help clients with all different types of, I guess, challenges and things throughout that they come across in their lives. But one of the things that kind of stood out for me was around this kind of parental guilt issue. And it's one of the things I know you help your clients with. So I'm really looking forward to getting into that conversation. But before we do, could you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, sure. So, I'm Rachel and I'm in my 40s and I'm a mum and I'm a wife. And I was a bit of a career woman in IT, of all things, IT security. But I also had been living with a chronic autoimmune disease for many years with varying levels of success with my recovery, but never really getting to where I wanted to be. Long and the short of it was I ended up getting so sick with it that I had to give up my career because I just couldn't show up at work anymore in the condition that I was in. And I always kind of knew that there had to be a way to recover from the disease that I had, which was ulcerative colitis, which is an inflammatory bowel disease. It's becoming more and more common, unfortunately. And I had been looking at different options for trying to get well outside the normal medication routes, which I was also doing. And I got quite a long way with it, but I hadn't really kind of put all the pieces together in the puzzle to get better. And it wasn't until I really started to address my mental health, how I deal with stress and my emotional health, that kind of, it was kind of the glue that brought everything else together, the nutrition, the sleep regime, the supplements, the exercise, and all of that stuff. So it kind of got me interested that we can all be well, but we do all need to work out our own routes to do that. So I retrained in functional medicine, which is root cause medicine, as a health coach. But then I became quite obsessed about the whole emotional side of it, because I do feel that that is kind of like the foundations to building good health. You know, you're not going to digest a really great nourishing meal if you're stressed, and you know, it goes on from there. So I also trained as an EFT practitioner and a heart math provider. These are like holistic therapies, holistic meaning that it is the interconnectedness of everything. So everything, you know, our bodies are fully connected, your mind, your emotions, your stress, your biology, everything works together. And from doing that work, doing that training and using it for myself and then using it on others as a coach and a therapist, I'm never ceased to be amazed by the results that I get from supporting people with their mental and emotional health in terms of improving their overall health. So that's kind of where I came from, a very sick place, and I recovered my own health and now I don't have any symptoms or any meds, and have been like that for some years, and now I'm supporting others with doing the same, really.
Fantastic. You know, I love hearing these stories. And I think what's very similar, that everyone that I speak to on this show, they've come from a place where there's been a challenge of some sorts in their life. And that has led them to the thing that they do now, because I guess you kind of saw in that moment, you had that realization that you could help yourself in so many different ways. And then now you're able to do that with other people. Now that must feel really great.
It is great. And what I find, and from listening to some of your podcasts, like you said, as well as the people that I've met on my journey, that's almost like how you find your meaning and purpose. Mm. I was going through life thinking that I kind of knew what that was, but it wasn't until I got that sick and then recovered that I realized that I had this passion to just help other people realize that they can do the same, that everyone can do the same, yeah, regardless of your situation. And that's what I've seen time and time again with the people that I meet as well that are doing the similar work to me.
Yeah. You know, I got really excited there when you mentioned about some of the things that you use, like EFT and HeartMath, the things that I've come across before with working with certain people, and both really fascinating. Both one of those things where I'm guessing maybe your clients have had that experience too, whereby initially you're kind of thinking, so how does this work again? And you kind of, but when you kind of experience it, as you well know, it can be really profound, can't it? The way in which you can kind of go from feeling in one way, just going through a series of, I guess, certain, you'll know this better than I will, but with EFT, using certain trigger points and things like that to help you through these challenges. It's so powerful, isn't it? Some of this stuff. And is it kind of a way thing that you would kind of use a mixture of different therapies depending on the type of challenges that present itself?
Yeah, exactly that. And you're right. It can be really profound, the changes. And it still amazes me every day when I use it with people, because everybody responds differently, because we're all unique. And what I love about those two particular techniques is that you can use it yourself, so you're not always having to do it with a coach or a practitioner like me. You know, the idea is I teach people to use it for themselves as well, so they've got those tools forever, because that is empowering to take control of your own emotional resiliency. So yes, it how I work with people all depends on what their needs are. Although what I do tend to find is they all do want to try these things, no matter how skeptical they are. Because that's another thing. It doesn't matter how skeptical you are with those two things, they're still gonna help. But yeah, I do use a blend of all sorts of things depending on the individual and what their needs are.
Yeah. I'm interested in kind of the process for people coming to work with you. You know, obviously you mentioned there that you work with lots of different people and you have various different tools that you can use. But is there kind of a common theme why people get to the point where they kind of get in touch with you? Obviously, you know, we see things, obviously you're putting out content and information and people come in contact, but in their lives, are they in similar situations? So for example, some people that I talk with on the podcast, their clients have got to the point where they've tried lots of different things in both groups or maybe on one-to-one, and just kind of, maybe it's worked for a period of time and maybe it just hasn't quite hit the mark for them.
Yeah.
Is there kind of a common theme with the clients that you work with?
Yeah, I think what I tend to notice is, regardless of what they're coming to me for, it's almost like they know there's something missing. They know there's something missing in their life, in their health, and they just can't quite get to what it is, but they just have this feeling that they do need the support to try and find what that is, because it's hard for us to do stuff alone. We do need this sense of community and being part of something bigger, whether that means working with another person or a group. But they come to me saying, you know, I am trying things, or I've tried and I've not quite succeeded. I need this extra support and investigations to find out really what is going on with me, to put those missing pieces together, a bit like I did for myself.
I can definitely relate to that, in that, you know, from my own experience, there was a number of years, only up until relatively recently, where my approach was just kind of to try and figure things out for myself, you know, trying things. I think there was a bit of ego in that. I think there was a bit of kind of pride in that, where I wanted to kind of, I should be able to do this, I should be able to do that, but you end up kind of shooting all over yourself, as you know. But it's only, you know, what I found is that when we open up and find people that are kind of in our tribe or our community, which can relate to the certain challenges that we have, or are willing to get into conversations to alleviate some of that stuff. We've talked about, you know, profound moments, but that was a huge game changer for me. That just in that instance whereby in that moment, you don't longer believe that you're the only person that's dealing with that kind of challenge, and that there are other people that I either are going through that, or they appreciate what you're going through, or just that they understand and they're willing to chat. You know, I think from a guy's point of view, I think generally we're not as great as women in regards to talking about certain things. But no, certainly, you know, working with people in my past has meant that has opened, unlocked all these different new doors, and has really, really been, really been helpful to me. But moving along, we're talking about parental guilt today. And I think from some people may have come across the term kind of mum guilt. That's one of the terms that people may have come across either by social media or through conversation with friends and family, and dad guilt as well. You know, it's yeah. on both sides. But when we speak about parental guilt, for those people that maybe haven't come across that term before, can you give us a bit of a background as to kind of what you mean by parental guilt?
Yeah, so it's a widespread issue. I think most parents feel it to an extent, even if they don't necessarily recognise what it is they're feeling as being a guilt. But it's this underlying uneasy feeling that you're not doing enough, or you're not doing it right, or you're not living up to the expectations of others. And what I also find is when we really drill down to it, and obviously I'm a mum and I have dealt with it, and I still do deal with it at times. Most of the time, it's actually the pressure we are putting on ourselves rather than the pressure that we're probably getting from other people. I do think that also there's a lot of societal pressure put on parents. That's probably especially mums, because they're told that they can have everything, but it also means they've got to do everything. That's how a lot of women feel. So they try and do it all. But I do also see it a lot with fathers too. So it definitely does affect most people, but it can be crippling, and it can ripple throughout all aspects of life.
And definitely, I think one of the things that when you say that, one of the things that a good example of that is with what you mentioned there about it's our own kind of putting on ourselves a lot of the time. Is that example when I remember when my first child went to primary school, and you gear up for that first day of primary school, and you're thinking about, you know, has she got everything that she needs? Has she got a uniform? Has she got a lunchbox? Has she got all that thing? And you've kind of built yourself up, and then you get to the school gate, and you're expecting this big kind of orchestra to play in the background, and you say, right, go off into the world and go forth. And she's like, all right, see you later, Dad, and goes in. Whilst you're there thinking, what the hell? You at least kind of cry or something, or do something like that. You know, we do that, don't we? You know, we put so much pressure on ourselves sometimes. And I'm guessing for different people, it presents itself in different ways as well. Is that right? Is it kind of, I'm guessing it's different for everyone.
Yeah, it is different for everyone, because, you know, how we work emotionally is everyone's individual, aren't they? And how they express things or feel things. So, commonly it is a feeling of guilt. It can also be a cause of anxiety and low mood, low self-esteem, low confidence, because you're putting so much effort into everybody else and everything else that there isn't any focus on what you need. So this really brings down your energy and your emotions, and it can really impact your mental health. I've had some people tell me that it actually makes them feel nauseous, you know, that makes you then almost think of how it feels in your gut. You know, it's this constant, constant unsettled feeling. Limiting beliefs come up a lot, comparing ourselves to others. It can express itself in so many different ways. I've probably heard 60 to 70 different symptoms of parental guilt, because it can express itself so widely. And some people feel an awful lot of things, and some people just find the one or two feelings around it.
Yeah. And the thing is, the thing that surprises me, and you kind of do it subconsciously, is the fact that, you know, we know that these feelings aren't great. We know that this way of thinking isn't healthy, but still we kind of just rattle on, don't we? We continue on that. And I think, I'm guessing some of that is that just that innate love for that child, your family, and you wanting to support them. But is it, what else is there in that? You know, why do we kind of carry that, even though we know it's not necessarily healthy for us?
No, I know. I completely agree. I think maybe because it's so widespread that it's almost accepted as normal. I read something the other day, something like, don't ask me where this survey was taken from, but about 80% of parents experience parental guilt.
Okay.
And about 60% or more feel it at least once or twice a day. So if you're feeling something that regularly, and probably at a subconscious level, so you're not necessarily aware of it, it becomes a normal state of mind and a normal way to live, especially when you've been a parent for so many years. And, you know, it can really hit hard in the teenage years as children are starting to leave home for university, because then that brings a whole another element to it. So it's so widespread that people firstly think it's acceptable and normal, And it's just part of being a good parent or a parent.
Yeah.
But also then, how do you start tackling it? People don't want to necessarily go there. It's easier to maybe change your diet or look at your sleep or do something else in your life than actually start to unpack a box of quite uncomfortable feelings, beliefs. So I think it might also be that. It's not something people want to embrace changing because they don't know how to start.
And I'm guessing as well that, like a lot of these things, you know, sometimes other things can present themselves, maybe in the way, you know, in our physiology, the way in which we feel, maybe thoughts about other things, maybe the trigger in which they maybe start that conversation with you. But then maybe later it comes out that it's more around that kind of parental guilt that's maybe the factor that's pushing everything up. I'm guessing, you know, it can have a lot of knock-on effects, I guess, in lots of different areas of our lives. What kind of examples have you seen with maybe the people that you've worked with, and maybe where there's been guilt at the core, but then it's presented itself in maybe more physiological kind of challenges?
Yeah, really great question. So if you think that a lot of the time, if I could sum it up in one like phrase, it's the inability to put yourself first. So if you think if someone comes to me and deep down they have an inability to put themselves first, this can show itself as not sleeping well, not eating well, whether that be not eating healthily or eating emotionally, because the knock-on is if you can't put yourself first, you're not in a very you're not in a great, healthy emotional state, and that can start manifesting itself in all kinds of way. Low confidence, low self-esteem, a lot of stress that's going on in the background. So this kind of guilt can create a stress response in the brain, which ripples through the body, and the brain and the gut are very closely connected. So if you think that connection is so intrinsic to our immune system, if you're constantly in a stress state because you are running this guilt program in the background, it can start to cause physical symptoms, which can be anything for anybody. A lack of ability to go and move well, exercise, take care of themselves. The list is endless.
I think it's one of those things that, what's that saying? How we do one thing is how we do everything. And I think, you know, maybe if there's certain areas of our lives that we aren't showing up in a way that perhaps we'd probably choose to if we had the choice, sometimes that gives us kind of an inkling as to what's going on in other areas sometimes, you know, with other stuff that's going on. And I guess with a lot of people, and we're speaking predominantly my audiences are people, business owners, people that are building businesses and that kind of stuff. And I would suggest, or I would guess that for a lot of mums predominantly, I mean, you speak to a lot about that, and dads as well. Maybe they've had their first child, had their second child. Maybe they did a role before. Maybe they worked for a company, or maybe they had their own business and they've had that time off to either maternity or paternity to spend with the child and to have that fantastic time with them. But then it kind of gets to the point where I guess we're talking about identity in a way, because we had an identity beforehand, whatever that was.
Yeah.
We assume this new identity as a parent, in whichever form that takes. And then I'm guessing there may be that urge somewhere to kind of get back into things, get back into work, get back into building that business. But maybe this guilt is what creeps in. Do you find that a lot with the conversations that you have?
Yeah. And that's a real big deal. We go through a lot of changes in our life situation, don't we? And especially when we become parents. And then as you quite rightly said, you take on a new identity, but you're still trying to hold the one that you already had. So that can cause a conflict. And then if you do choose to go back to work and you go back, you're then torn again because you want that back, but you still also want to be doing the best you can for your child and fill all of these roles. So this can be a really influential time when that guilt is triggered, because we are in part of the world that is expected of us. We do need to make an income. We also want to lead our own lives and still be our own person, but we're juggling that with also being a parent, and it can be really overwhelming for a lot of people.
And I guess it depends also about, you know, the other kind of stakeholders in this whole situation. So you've got your partner who's a stakeholder in this. You've got maybe the workplace which you came from, or the boss or the business partner that you worked from before. And not necessarily everyone has the same kind of opinion around what the next step should be. Maybe if you've worked somewhere before, you know, your boss is understandably wanting you to kind of get back into things. But for yourself, you're kind of in that situation where you're thinking, well, is this the right time? You know, I know there's never a right time for everything, but is this the right time for me based on what my hopes and dreams were for this moment, this period of maternity or paternity? So I guess for the people that are kind of listening to this or watching this over on YouTube, is that when you're in that situation, maybe you've felt like this for a little while, maybe you've only just started to feel like this, maybe you've started to encounter different kind of physiology which isn't too pleasing, and you maybe think this is the core of what's going on. What's kind of a best place to kind of start with this? Because I'm guessing the knee-jerk reaction might be, right, I've got to do this. And we all know that if we do all those things, we just don't get anywhere. And what I love is about talking to people about that first step that you make to kind of set you on course for where you want to go. Where do you kind of, when you sit down for a client for the first time, I'm guessing that there's a lot of conversation first and just understanding the client. But what's kind of a good first step in to kind of veering off in the direction that you want to?
I think it's really important that they acknowledge that if it is the guilt, if it is this guilt that's really causing them an issue, acknowledging that it's there, because a lot of the time, as we've already discussed, it can be hidden and people don't want to accept it. It might make them feel like it's a weakness in some way when it isn't at all. So acknowledge how you're feeling is a really important first step, I think. I think that is for anything. And then trying to start to make that time for yourself in whatever way you can, because I think we do spend a lot of our time distracted from who we are and being with ourselves. We're always filling our minds with everything else we should be doing. If we're not doing that, it's social media or it's Netflix or it's something else which is distracting us from being with ourselves. So I do ask clients to start thinking about how they can bring in that time to think about how they can find a little space in the day for themselves, even if it's for daydreaming about what they really want from their life. Because again, I think we're so closed off from that, the possibility that is open to us in life, because we are so busy, like blinkered on this like one way route through our life, that's another thing. So acknowledging it, starting to find very, very small ways to bring in some time for yourself each day, even if it's 5 minutes, and then consider at some point almost daydreaming about what is it you want from your life. How do you want to feel? What do you want to achieve? What is your meaning and purpose beyond being a parent? And helping them start to look at that bigger picture, because it helps them realize then that are you surviving or are you thriving? And often people will say, I'm surviving. I'm just doing what I think I need to do. I think I've got a good life, but actually I'm not looking at the bigger picture of what I could be seeking.
And I think, again, that realization that we need to take time for ourselves and just be with ourselves, and that kind of promotes just thoughts and ideas and things. I think that can be alien to a lot of people, you know, if they've, you know, spent so much time, specifically if it's their first child perhaps, and they haven't gone through this experience before. And all that time up until this point has been devoted to this child, making sure this child is okay. But then the opportunity to take time for themselves, I'm guessing in those conversations could be a little bit of kind of resilience. Have you seen that?
Yeah, massive resistance, because the first thing they're going to feel is it's selfish. This does need to change. So I try and help people realize that it's not selfish to put yourself first. There is the oxygen mask analogy, you know, you put the mask on yourself before you put it on the child or whoever else that's around you. But it's not selfish to start to look after yourself in any way that you can, because it's the ripple effect. So if they can't do it for themselves to start with, do it for your child or your children, do it for your partner. If that is the only way that you'll justify doing it for yourself. And then over time, when you start to feel the benefits of whatever changes it is we're working on, you'll start doing it for yourself. And that in itself can boost your self-esteem, your confidence. And I truly believe that that can have a really big impact on your physical and mental health too, when you start to actually appreciate that what you need matters as much as everyone else.
And one of the big kind of turning points with me was that, you know, before I was trying to find time and I felt guilty around certain things. And one of the things that someone said to me, or I read somewhere, was that, you know, kids, as they grow up, you can tell them everything in the world, but yes, they may listen to a certain extent, but they're watching all the time. And they learn so much based on what they see dad or mum do on a day-to-day basis. So I had that in my mind and I thought, well, if I'm able to, I wouldn't want my child to go through similar maybe things I was feeling or going through that time. So what if I was able to allocate time, and my son and my daughter was there able to see that I was allocating time, hopefully in the future. They may take that on and think that's really important. That's really important for me to incorporate in my life. And I have examples of that all the time, because there's lots of ways that, as we know, we can take time for ourselves. One of the ways I love to do it is through meditation, through a guided meditation, through the apps, which you can get anywhere. And that's amazing. As soon as I wake up, I do that. And before I go to bed as well. But then you see, you know, my son come in, or, you know, he wants me, and he sort of comes in and you hear him running really fast, and he'll come to the door and then he'll look, put his head through, and he'll see me. Oh, dad's doing meditation. And he was just slowly tiptoe out. So it started, for me, that was really powerful. And it was able to, for me to kind of start to build these building blocks, which are going to obviously benefit myself, but also benefit hopefully my children in the future as well. I guess it's just about finding what works for you, I'm guessing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that, I love that story you've just told, because that is actually really important what you're doing, I think, because they do learn so much from us. And something that people often hear me say, it's like a broken record, but we learn about the world around us before we're seven, because of the brain waves that we are creating at that time. Mm. We are like sponges. So every single thing we see, hear, feel, touch, smell, experience goes in by the time we're about seven. We've kind of decided what we think about the world and how we're going to survive in it. So anything we can do to show our children how we want to look after ourselves is definitely going to have a good effect on them. Because a lot of the people I work with, when I start digging into what's going on, it's coming from what they've seen when they were young, and their parents would have done the same, and their parents would have done the same. And we are history repeating itself. So it is really important that you do that. But everybody is different. Everybody's goals and visions are different. And what fires people up is different to the next person. So for one person, it could be meditation. For another person, it could be drawing or doodling. For another person, it could be getting out in nature. All kinds of things, because, you know, our stimulus and what makes us happy and calm is, you know, varies greatly.
Yeah. And I think, Rachel, I think what the great thing about it now in this time is that we are at a time when there are conversations about these things. There, you can listen to a podcast, you can watch a YouTube video, you can have a conversation with someone about these things. You know, we talked about kind of generational stuff there. And if I think back to my parents, if they were feeling this at that time, what would they have done? There may have been a book somewhere at a library somewhere that may have had it. They may have had specific professionals that they could access through doctors, perhaps. I don't know, you know, but the fact that we live in this time now where there's this information available is such a amazing time to be living, and such an amazing time when we have access to so much stuff. I think you'll agree there's no better time to kind of just try and wriggle through some of this stuff and to kind of get some assistance. I think, so once we've kind of allocated that time, maybe we've taken time to kind of think, well, where do I want to go? What do I want to do? Where do we start? Because I'm guessing that, you know, it's one thing kind of knowing where you want to go and understanding and having that time for yourself and having some more breathing space. But regardless of whether you're working with a professional like yourself or self-guiding that through your own roots, what's kind of a good first step to kind of getting you on your way, do you think?
So I think if someone was listening to this and they thought, right, this sounds like me, and how do I want to start? Be aware that there are many components to your life. And it could be thinking about, and there's various coaching tools you can look up online for this, you know, like a wheel of life type thing, which I know that someone's talked about before in your podcast. It's quite a commonly used tool in industry as well. Start looking at the different areas of your life. Where do you think you're struggling or suffering? Where is it lacking? And is that somewhere you want to start focusing on first? So you can start to prioritize. Otherwise, it can all feel very overwhelming, not knowing where to start. And you can do that on your own. You know, whether that is your sleep, you know, you're really just not getting the sleep you need. And you know deep down that you could be doing better. You know you're not making the right food choices. Again, you might have an idea of what you need to change. Are you really struggling with your, with how you're dealing with your stress? Whatever it might be, map it out, prioritize where you want to start. And what I would say is, you do, accountability is a really great thing to have, whether you're working with a coach or on your own, it's because it helps you kind of focus on what it is you're going to do and stay on track. So when you've started to think about which areas you're struggling in, also think about the bigger picture. What is, what's your big why? What is it that drives you forwards? What is it you want to achieve in 5 years, 10 years, whatever scale you want? Then once you've kind of found out what that purpose and meaning is for you, you can start to think about, how do I start to get there? Now, that is a big way off. So you don't worry about that too much. You think about, what's the first step I need to put? What foot do I put in front of the other as a first sort of step towards that bigger goal? And when you've thought of what that might be, make someone accountable, make yourself accountable to someone else. So that could be a friend, your partner, even one of your kids. It doesn't matter who it is, because what you, what you'll find is, as soon as you announce that you want to do something, you're making that commitment. The commitment level already goes up because someone's going to be asking if you're doing it. So that's kind of a good place to start. And that is, you'll find that you'll get that kind of a model if you're working with a coach, but that is what you can do when you're alone. See what you want to prioritize. Think about what your bigger picture is and work out what the small steps are for getting you there. And then ask someone to help you be accountable to some of those small initial steps.
Yeah, that's great. It's huge about being accountable. You know, lots of friends and colleagues have used that model and working with either someone in a professional manner or just having someone that they could pick up a phone and say, look, I'm feeling like this.
Yeah.
I want to feel like this.
Yeah.
I don't want you to do anything other than to listen. And then this is what I'm going to do. Can you just check in on me at certain times? Maybe we catch up for coffee. Maybe that's a phone call, a Zoom call as we're having now, if you're a little bit further away. It's surprising how powerful that is, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, because it is.
Just in even the fact that you can just offload, download what you've got in your head to another person. So it's not kind of bubbling around in your own head. You know, lots of people say that, you know, write things down, get it out of your head onto paper or onto a keyboard or whatever. And that's really powerful. But I'm guessing it can be anyone, can't it? This person that they're going to be accountable to.
Can be anyone. It can be anyone. It's like you said earlier about yourself, when you said that you were trying to tough it out and do everything yourself, and then you realized that once you started to actually engage other people on some level, it made it seem so much more straightforward and easier or manageable or achievable. So it's that same thing. You can use anybody as an accountability partner. It's just someone that you know is going to remember to check in on you. But what I would say is, whatever you are committing to doing, make it small and make it achievable. There is no point trying to make some big leap forward, because all you're doing is you're setting yourself up to fail. And if we're dealing with parental guilt, then you are setting yourself up to fail again. And you're already going to be feeding into that same issue that you're trying to get out of. So always make goals really tiny. They might seem too small, but if you know that they're achievable, then that is, that starts this feeling of achievement. And that is a really important mindset to be in, is that you can succeed.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's important to mention as well is that when we're choosing someone, it's kind of choosing someone that we think is going to be the good fit for this role. So I think we all have varying different relationships and people in our lives. And there's some people that are there for you, you know, innately that they're there to support you. And there may be others that maybe you're not too sure of. And sometimes the ones that you're not too sure of are sometimes more comfortable in engaging in those conversations. Maybe it's someone that you've always been friends with, or so forth, and it's more comfortable in that circumstance. But what you're asking is to have someone keep you accountable to feeling often what might be sort of uncomfortable going forward as well. Yeah. So I think that's important to mention, that just think about, is this the right person? Are they going to be reliable to check in with me? Are they going to tell me, are they going to tell me the truth with love, obviously, but, you know, tell me truth. Because I think with, you know, there's people, some are radiators, some are drains, and some radiate and some pull things away. And I think we just need to be a bit mindful about who we choose, because sometimes it's not always a good fit for everyone. I think what's important as well is that when we feel like this, it's important to, when we make progress, to reward ourselves, to slap ourselves on the back, say, great job. And that might be something, a conversation that you haven't often had with yourself.
Yeah.
And especially if you're feeling guilt at any level, it's probably the last thing that you've experienced in maybe the last 6 months to a year. How important is that through that process?
It's 100% vital to reward and acknowledge any achievements that you make while you're trying to make changes in your life, regardless of what the changes are. And especially, if you've been feeling this guilt and not been able to put yourself first, you must reward yourself. Now, whether that be when you kind of come up with this bigger vision of what you want from your life, for example, and you know there's quite a lot of small steps to get you there and it could take some time, you've got to keep yourself motivated. And then if you set yourself these small achievable goals, when you meet them, at the same time as setting the goal, you could already be thinking, how am I going to celebrate this? Doesn't matter if it's a coffee at your favorite coffee shop or going out with a friend or whatever it is for you that feels like a reward or a treat or a celebration of some sort. Make sure you have that in the back of your mind, because it keeps you motivated, and commit to doing it. Don't achieve things and then brush it off, because that's commonly what can happen. People don't really think it's all that. Oh, it wasn't really all that really when it came to it. No, you must always reward and acknowledge how far you've come, because if you don't do that, you're going to get complacent and you're more likely to slip back to how you were when you started. Also, one thing I would add to that, any improvements you make in life, whether it's mindset, physical health, mental health, don't expect that path to be linear. You are going to get some setbacks, and that is perfectly normal. But another point I would just make, which is kind of connected to reward and acknowledgement, is that when you do get these inevitable setbacks, don't see them as failures. See them as places for you to learn, work out what you'll do next time so that you can then succeed. Because that's what I find with my clients when they do get these bumps in the road, or whatever you want to call them, as disappointing as it can feel, that is where the real growth can come. Because that's when you've really got to dig in and start to uncover why that didn't work and what do I need to do next time and what have I learned about myself in that process. And again, that is something else to reward yourself for. Because you're getting a better, deeper understanding of yourself, and you're increasing your resiliency.
Yeah, two great points. Two things that stood out for me there. The first one that you just mentioned about knowing how to acknowledge things that don't go right and to use them as learning opportunities. Again, just thinking back to, you know, the core of this conversation, this child, this family, how amazing is it to see mum or dad hit these things, say, this happened, and this is how we're going to put it right. What an amazing kind of skill set are they going to see and take on? You know, I see that in school with, as my kids learning, you know, it's okay to make mistakes in your maths homework or your English homework. You know, sometimes there can be so much pressure around getting things right. And where often, like you say, more growth comes from the fact that you don't know how to do something, you hit a roadblock, you adjust your course and you go off, and hopefully you're in a better position next time. There's so much power in that. Second thing I want to mention as well is that around rewarding yourself. And I know, to me, in my experience, it's kind of been like putting a flag up and saying, this is a moment in time where something good has happened. Because often sometimes when you could go through long periods of time where you don't have that milestone. And what happens is you just kind of carry on thinking, oh, well, nothing much has happened. But then if you've got these flags that you're putting in and saying, I did this, 2 weeks later, I did this, I feel that my brain goes, oh, this thing's happened again. This thing's happened again. And we kind of build that habit into ourselves around, you know, these things are happening more often. So what does that mean? That means this is happening, or this has happened, or you're getting better in these sort of things. I think that's really powerful and just kind of trying to start to train the brain. Would you agree in that respect?
You're so right. You know, we have our brains have a negativity bias. Mm. It is natural for us to dwell on the negative rather than the positive. It's probably a survival technique. So you must make the effort, like you said, that was such a great idea, you know, put a flag in it, and then you can look back and see how many things you have achieved. Because as you know, when your brain is hardwired to just dwell on the negative, look for what is not working well rather than what is working well, you do have to really stake your claim when things do go well in order to start to break those patterns in the mind to increase the positive neural pathways. Because this is where opportunity comes from, progression. This is how you start to nurture a growth mindset, which is a talk for another time. Fixed and growth mindset. It's really, really important. Really important.
Yeah, no, definitely. And for me, that was kind of mind blown in a way, because in the past where I started to build a more robustness, or I built that muscle in certain areas which I hadn't done previously, what happened is because I was in that state whereby I was more open, or more, my thoughts were in a more of a kind of positive place, I guess, all these other things started just coming into my life or opening up for me. And that's kind of one of the, I want to talk about kind of like the knock-on effects in a great way when you start to work on some of these things. I think that's important to say, you know, there's knock-on effects when you feel like this initially, but if you feel like this now and you're able to work through it, this is what things could be like. And it's like you start to mend one area and then everything else opens up in lots of different areas. You know, it could be you start to exercise more, or you start to feel better about yourself, or you start to, you know, you start to get more connection through business, or you start to, I don't know, there's so many different things. I'm sure you've gone through this as well. What kind of things have you seen open up for people that you've worked with around, once they start to work on some of this stuff, what has been some of the surprise and things that have kind of opened up for them? And from that, how has that kind of blown their mind a little bit?
So, yeah, I love this sort of topic, because it's about what you're attracting into your life. And what you put out, you get back. We can all think of a time where things weren't going great. And when you think about it, we weren't in a great place. One bad thing happened, we dwelled on it, and then everything else went wrong. Like the times when people's domestic appliances break, and there's always three of them, because we're so concentrating on, God damn, the washing machine's bust, and then something else breaks, and then something else breaks. And we're almost expecting it, therefore it happens. So, yeah, when you start to focus on yourself and you start to bring more possibility and positivity into your life by putting yourself first and starting to do things that make you feel genuinely happy and bring that joy back in, which is often missing from a lot of people that I work with, then yes, other things do start to happen. Their relationships start to get better without effort. They suddenly find that they're running their 5Ks a lot faster. I've had that happen, but we've not really been focusing on that. Career paths have changed, but without any effort, and they felt much happier in the path that they're now. But it's almost like it comes to them rather than going to look for it. What else has happened in the top? And what's coming to my mind? Business connections, like you were saying, amazing emails can come in out of nowhere, or somebody will connect someone to someone else that they didn't think they'd ever be able to connect to. Mm. All stemming from taking more care of themselves and just generally bringing a much more optimistic growth approach to their life, but putting them at the heart of it instead of being on the outskirts looking in.
I think one of the funny things that I experienced as well is that, you know, even when you've gone through that and you've seen, you start to see that growth in yourself, and you're starting to go off and do different things. In my experience, it was kind of like, yeah, but from an outside point of view, everyone knew I was all right. They thought I was, it was, everything was fine. Well, they didn't, they kind of knew something was going on. I think even though we think we've got this kind of shield or this protection that we kind of keep within ourselves and we kind of deal with stuff, you know, people know these things. So switching that the other way, when you start to come more, when the fire starts to come up and you start to be more alight and you're more interactive and you're doing different things, you know, people want to be around that, you know, people want to be part of that. And we know from, if we're working with businesses or we're working with the friends that we hang out with or the family members that we hang out with, people want to be around people that have that spark in them, don't they? So it's it was one of the really funny things that I experienced, in that I thought, yes, everything's from here onwards, everyone thinks just everything's fine, but people know, people have got intuition like we do, which is which was really good. So if someone's listening to this conversation and they are thinking, yeah, I mean, I think I identify with some of the things that Rachel has mentioned, and I will maybe want to get into a conversation. Maybe I've got people around me, but I think what I need is kind of like someone that I can be truly accountable to in a more professional manner. What's kind of some advice for people to take on board when they're kind of looking for someone to work with in a professional capacity, as a coach or some other form?
Yeah. So, yeah, it can be, coaches have their place, and there's thousands now in the UK. It's a really growing area, because, you know, everybody needs a coach. Everybody needs some support at some point in their life. And also it's confidential, so you can really just get it out there, it is you're feeling, and it's non-judgmental, it's unbiased, and your coach is, for want of a better phrase, your cheerleader. They want you to do well. And that's all they want for you is to, and they know that you can do well. So when you're looking for someone, make sure that they are, they're associated with the UK Health Coach Association. That's always a good starting point, because to be under that umbrella, you need to be certified through certain coaching academies and institutions, which are highly regarded. Always meet the coach before you agree to work with them. So if someone was coming to me, I wouldn't work with them unless we'd had a free discovery call, or whatever you might want to call it, over Zoom, where we find out, what is it you want to achieve? Where are you now? Where do you want to be? And what are the issues? Because it gives you a chance to find out, can I work with this person? Do I trust them? Do they get me? Am I going to enjoy it? Because it doesn't have to be daunting. It can be a really fun process. I mean, when people come to me, that, you know, we don't take things too seriously, because this is life and we're making changes, and it's got to be fun. So make sure that you can talk to the coach like it's your friend, and that you don't have any kind of hesitation or resistance, because you do need to find the person that's a really good fit for you, and ensure that you understand what they can and can't do for you, because all coaches may be certified in a different way and with different qualifications. Like for me, for example, I am a health coach in functional medicine, but I also have EFT and heart math and some other bits and bobs. So people do tend to come to me because it's not just necessarily their health, but it's also releasing trauma and helping with their mental health, because I've also trained as a mental health first aider. So everybody is different, and you need to find that person that's kind of got that background and experience that's kind of ticking all the boxes for that individual that's looking for a coach. And also have a think about what kind of a commitment do you want with this coach? If you're going to work with a health coach, it's a close working relationship, and you're going to be working with them for some time. It could be anything from 6 to 8 weeks to 6 months. Some go beyond that, depending on what they're working on. So you need to also be ready to do the work. So that's another kind of question before you start engaging with coaches. Are you actually ready to do this work?
Yeah.
Because they're not going to do it for you. You're going to have to do it yourself.
And I guess that's the beautiful thing about having a discovery call in the beginning, because then you can kind of, I guess from your point of view, you can just listen to what the person feels that they need to deal with. And I think you'd agree that any great coach as well will say, if they're not the right fit for them, then you may be a better fit for so-and-so, or, you know, someone else that they may know or something like that, because there is so many people that do have all the different niches in what they work with. And again, from what I'm hearing as well, is that it's very tailored to the person as well. There's no kind of like black and white, it will be this amount of time or this amount of time. It's about taking the opportunity up front to build a relationship. And then if you feel that they're a good fit for you based on personality and expertise and lots of other factors. And I'm guessing they kind of just check in every other time. Is it both in person and in this format via Zoom? Could they work in that way as well?
Yeah, so taking how I work as an example, you have regular check-ins that are discussed at the start of the program.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's usually sort of weekly or fortnightly, depends on the individual's schedule. Mm. And that is over Zoom. And you know exactly how long it's going to be, what time it's going to be. And then certainly with me, and often with most coaches, you're going to be covering the goals that you may have set, if you've set any, achievements, setbacks, and further developing how you keep moving forwards towards that end goal.
Yeah.
And again, with me, it's like using all different tools and techniques, whatever might be coming up for that client at the time that's appropriate.
Yeah, that's great advice. So this podcast is called Make Today Count. Reason for it being is I wanted people to get into conversations about things that maybe they're aware about, maybe things that they hadn't had a conversation about before. And then from each episode, when they've taken in all of that information, to have that one thing that they could do. So if there's someone listening to this or watching this over on YouTube, they could get a sense of, okay, maybe some of this stuff sounds like what I'm going through at the moment. To give them that one thing that they could do the next day, because we spoke a little bit earlier on, you know, sometimes we can just go off and think we need to change the world tomorrow, where in experience, it just doesn't work like that. We need that one step to take forward. So if someone would listen to this and they were kind of thinking, yeah, maybe I want to start to navigate through some of this stuff. And I know we're kind of recapping a little bit, but what would be that one thing that you'd say tomorrow? Try this.
Tomorrow, take full responsibility for where you are now. Mm. That was a big lesson for me when my health was at its lowest. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I do help everybody that I meet with, is taking that responsibility. Because once you take full responsibility for whatever it is, whatever the situation is in life, whatever you might be dealing with, it empowers you. It puts you in the driver's seat of your life, where I think we are very used to being told what to do, thinking that there's a quick fix for a lot of things, which can lead to disappointment, and putting blaming other things for where we are now. And while we're doing that, we aren't going to move forward. So that's what I would say, is take responsibility for where you are now, with no blame and no judgment, but only from that point can you really grow.
That's great advice. And I think that getting yourself in thinking about that might take you a few days, it might take you a few weeks, it might take you a few months, you know, but I think I agree, that's truly important, because from that place, if we don't kind of take ownership of that stuff, the rest of the journey is going to be a little bit bumpy, isn't it, you know, in respect, because we need to take that. And I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with, because we don't like to say that things might be our choosing or our doing, or we want to blame other things, but hugely powerful. I know you've got all the work that you do with your clients and how you help them, but if there's anyone that's kind of listening, what have you kind of got going on? How can they kind of connect with you? I know that you've got specific course on your website around parental guilt. Do you want to have a little chat about that? And you know, if it were to check that out.
Yeah, that's a good one. So if any of you are listening to this, watching this, you can just follow me on Instagram. But also that is something quite fun. I launched a course a few months ago. It's an online course and you get lifetime access to it. And it's a mini course, self-study, and it's called Mum Guilt Makeover. Dads have bought it as well, but you know, Mum Guilt Makeover, it kind of rhymed. And it's four workbooks, they're individualized. It's four videos. And there's also your own EFT session and script. Mm. So EFT is emotional freedom technique, also known as tapping. It's a really powerful self-help technique. And you can study that at your own pace, but I've made it really fun and creative because a lot of online courses can seem like they're going to be quite boring, but I've made it really fun. It's creative. It's helping you start to think about what you really want from your life, and it saves you years of just waiting for the time to be right, because it's never going to be right. You've got to take control of it now. So there is that mini course. And actually, if anybody that's watching this podcast, if you send me a message on Instagram, I'll give you a 20% discount for listening to this podcast if they want to download it.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you so much for that. So yeah, guys, check that out. And make sure you follow Rachel on what's your Instagram handle? Is it?
It's Rachel Turner Wellness.
Perfect.
And if you want to find out more about me in general, my website is www.rachelturnerwellness.co.uk.
Perfect. And we'll link that up in the show notes as well. So if you listen to this, you can just head down there and I'll put all the links there for you as well. Rachel, it's been amazing chatting to you today. I'm really glad that we were able to connect and have this conversation, a conversation that I think needs more conversation around it. It affects a lot of people. And I think hopefully what we've done today has enabled someone to have that first step into acknowledging the fact that, you know, this may be something that they're experiencing. And if so, what the steps they can take. I'd like to finish off with gratitude and just to thank you for everything you're doing in the world. All the work that you're doing with clients, the way that the messages that you're spreading and the important conversations you're allowing people to get into. We spoke a little bit earlier about how this is an amazing time to learn about all these different things, to acknowledge them, to acknowledge that it's okay to feel these things and that there are people out there to support them. So thank you for everything that you're doing.
And thank you for your podcast and bringing people together so that we can have these conversations, because, you know, community is key as far as I'm concerned. It's people like you that make that happen. So thank you.
Thank you. So guys, I hope you found this episode really informative. If you listen to this and you're thinking there's been a couple of kind of like moments where the light bulb's gone off, where you've thought, that sounds like me, or I think I can do that. We'd love to hear what those aha moments are. So make sure you're following both myself at Ross Dean Photo and also Rachel as well over on Instagram, and let us know. Let us know what those moments were for you in this episode. Also, if you haven't already done so, we'd really love a review for the podcast. And what's important to me is that I want to give value to you, but I want to kind of share these conversations with as many people as I can. So if you've got someone that you think this might be a good fit for, or you just want to tell them about it and say, look, I listened to this podcast and it gave me this value, I think it would be valuable to you too, please share. And also, if you haven't already done so, leave a review over on iTunes as well. And if you're looking for a kind of a proactive area of the internet where you can share ideas and business ideas and can build connections, we're over on the Elevate community over on Facebook as well. We'd love to have you there. But until next time, I've been Ross Dean. This has been Make Today Count, and I'll see you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.